City Community Radio, streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our show that we're doing is a request from a guest who was almost a victim of scammers. Today, our guest in the studio is Detective Lori Meadows of the Kansas City Police Department Economic Crime Section. Good morning, Detective Meadows. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how long you've been a member of the Kansas City Police Department, for example?
Well, I've been with the Kansas City Police Department for approximately 13 years. And I've been a detective for 10 years in various units, and I've been with the Economic Crime Section for about 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Detective Meadows, what is the role of the Economic Crime Section?
Well, we actually investigate many, many, many different crimes. I think about 20 different crimes. But what we investigate is identity theft, fraud, whether in person or online. We investigate forgeries, embezzlements, just basically anything to do with a financial scam.
Okay. What is a scam?
Well, basically it is taking somebody's money and not giving them in return what you had promised. It's basically fooling somebody, tricking somebody into giving you money, whether it's for charity or for a product or for, you know, an item that you buy online, anything that you can buy legitimately, people pretty much make up a scam for.
Yes, that is true. I mean, it's one of those things of it's the holiday season, so anything that can be sold online,
right?
You'll see the same thing on Craigslist that go offer up, and they'll be selling it cheaper. But the question is it actually the real thing or an imitation of what you're looking to buy? So how does a scam work?
Well, a scam can work in a lot of different ways. It can work in person. It can work online. It can work over the phone. It can be through an email. It can be through a link on a website. It can be a phone call to you asking for money for something, whether somebody needs help or it's a charity. And it can be in person. We've had scams where people have been approached for housework, whether they're young or old. People will promise to fix something on your house, and you give them money and they never show up or they don't do what was promised. So scams occur in a lot of different ways.
I know in 2017, according to MarketWatch, fewer consumers reported being a victim of fraud, but those that did lost over $905 million, almost $1 billion. Is that an accurate number?
I would say so. I mean, locally, we see scams anywhere from a couple of hundred dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if you multiply that by everybody in the United States, that probably is pretty accurate.
The number of economic crimes reported in 2017 increased by 7% from 2016, but only 21% of consumers made a complaint to the Federal Trade Commission. Why are some people reluctant to avoid being saying they've been a victim of a scam or a financial economic crime?
I would say probably the primary reason is embarrassment. You know, they don't want to tell people that they fell for a scam. Because it does. It can cause a lot of emotions to people, whether it's hurt feelings or embarrassment or anger. Money is important to people. Money is something that you earn and that you work hard for. And so when somebody takes that from you, it can be very frustrating and emotional for some people. The second reason they might just realize that, hey, I fell for a scam. There's probably nothing legally or criminally that can be done about it, so I might as well just wash my hands of it and move on from it. I would say those are probably the two main reasons that people don't report it.
Okay. Many people think that senior citizens are the most vulnerable when it comes to victims of scammers, but more young people aged 20 to 29 reported that 40% of the complaints to the Federal Trade Commission. What could account for that more of our young people in that age are being scammed? Is it because they're online or because of how they're being contacted?
I would say that's true. When we were younger, we weren't online as much. And then when we were online, it was just a dial-up, internet and on the computer at one desk. We didn't have laptops. We didn't have smartphones. And so I think that when you take the avenue on which scams are perpetrated and you multiply the ways that people can do it, of course you're going to have an increase. And I would say that age range is way more into technology than the older age ranges. And so, of course, when you're exposed to something a little bit more, it's probably going to increase that activity.
And one of the questions I saw was, while those who are younger may be easier targets, the loss for seniors aged 70 to 79 was on average $621 versus $400 for those aged 20 to 29. Why is it that seniors seem to lose more money when they're victims of scams? It's estimated that seniors lose over $3 billion per year.
They might have more money at that point in life. They might be more frugal and had more time to build up their savings than somebody in the younger age range. And they're willing to give more money. It may depend on the reason that they think they're giving somebody money. If you call and, most recently we've all heard of the grandson, granddaughter scams being in jail. If you call somebody and say they're in jail and they need $2,000 in bond money, as opposed to somebody who's 25 and they get a call from a charity and they just want to give them $200, that's going to increase that amount. So,
and that scam that you just mentioned is one that's just started out rolling this week.
Mm-hmm.
And that people need to understand is that if you're going to, one, a bail bondsman is not going to contact you. You're most likely going to meet them at the police station where then you would exchange a cash or check, and then they would give you the bail bond receipt, but it's not going to be something where somebody's going to come to your house and come pick up that money.
No. And they shouldn't take any financial or personal information from you over the phone either. We encountered a scam this week, and it caused quite a stir with our phone system as well. People were receiving phone calls, and it appeared to be from KCPD, from our administrative line. And, of course, when they called the number back, they actually did reach our switchboard, and it inundated our switchboard with phone calls. But it was the granddaughter, grandson scam. People would answer, and somebody would say grandma or grandpa. And, unfortunately, sometimes people say Billy or Julie. They'll use the names of their grandchild, and so that kind of gives the person an edge on that phone call, and they'll say, I'm in jail, I need money, give me your credit card or your bank card, or go, another common way is going to a store down the street and getting gift cards, reloadable gift cards. They'll say, well, the jail will accept payment in reloadable gift cards, and they'll do it that way, too. So
now we have to clarify that. The jail would not accept payment in reloadable gift
cards.
Right.
Yeah. The scammers are saying that.
Oh,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
But so there's some people out there that may think that the jail won't accept a wire. They won't accept reloadable gift cards. If you're going downtown to pay a ticket or you're trying to bond somebody out, it is either cash.
Right.
Most likely they'll let you put it on a credit card, but it's either one of those two means. There's not any way that people...
Right. And it's going to have to be in person.
Exactly. And that was going to be my next point, is that you can't do it over the phone.
No.
You have to call. You can't call in. You have to go down.
Right.
My aunt was a... Somebody called her this week with that same scam, and she's like, you know, I don't have any kids, hence I can't have any grandkids, so I think you got the wrong number. Have a nice day.
Yep.
So the assumption is that those who are less educated are more vulnerable to being scammed, but often the opposite is true. Those between 25 and 34 who've lost money, more than half had a college degree. So is there something that makes those that are more educated an easier target for those looking to scam others?
I don't really think it necessarily has anything to do with education. Everybody's different when it comes to their level of education. Everybody's different when it comes to their level of street smarts. Everybody's different when it comes to their level of emotion or how they think with their emotions. And that's what these scammers play on. They call and they pretend to be a utility company, or they pretend to be the IRS, or... They're going to pretend to be an organization under which will cause panic or fear. They'll tell you that, you know, you haven't paid your tax bill, we're going to come arrest you immediately. You know, it's 20 degrees outside, you haven't paid your gas bill, we're going to shut off your gas immediately. And so people start panicking. And when they start panicking, they make poor decisions. And panic can occur whether you're educated or not. Panic can occur whether you're young or old. And so that's, I think that's more the key than anything else, is that you just kind of have to keep your emotions in check when dealing with these people and take a step back.
You just read my mind on that one. It's, if it's an emergency now and somebody's trying to do something with you, then it's something that you should be able to take a few minutes.
Sure.
Breathe, relax, determine what you're going to do.
Right.
And then call and verify, because time is on your side. The longer that you delay paying that person, that you don't send the money, then they're going to look at, if they can't get you within a certain period of time, they're going to look at moving on to somebody else that they may be get quicker.
Yes.
So it's the one thing that you have to slow it down, take a minute and breathe, because Aquila, or the old Casey... BPU, KCP&L won't send anybody to your door to collect.
Right.
And if they do send somebody to the door, your door, the first thing you should ask them is, where is their KCP&L BPU ID card? And they should have a number that you may be able to call back to BPU and say, well, if you say, let me get your number and then I'll call BPU to verify. But the first thing also, remember, if you see somebody like that, it's a safety thing. Make sure your screen door is locked. You know, ask if you see, open up the window, then ask them to put that up to the, if you open up the, you know, you can see it, you know, you slide the blind back, ask them to put it up. Don't open up the door, because then you make yourself a victim also, because once they get in, then time then goes from your side to their side.
Sure. I mean, you are in control of the situation. And whether they're from a utility company or a federal agency, I mean, we've had people that call the police and we show up to their door and they still call our dispatch back and verify that we are the two officers that are supposed to be there. And that's okay. Anybody from any legitimate organization should be okay with that. And furthermore, they should have, like you said, an ID card or a badge. And that ID card or badge should have either their name or an identifiable number that their company can trace. And so if you want to verify that, do it. You know, you're in control of the situation, and that person should be okay with it. And if they're not okay with it, one of two things. Either they're scamming you and they're fraudulent, or they're going to get in trouble by their company for poor customer service. So that person should be okay with that.
And think also that anybody coming to your door is not going, they may tell you that you are late on a payment and you can call, they should give you something that says you can call a number and make arrangements, but they're not going to take cash from you at the, they're not gonna, nobody's going to take cash from you or gift cards or anything else, or tell you to wire money to a you know, a place at your door.
Right. No.
Go ahead.
And I'll throw out an example, because we frequently get people who call and say, the gas company called, or the water company or utility company called and said they're going to shut off my utility immediately if I don't pay them. And, you know, I end up not giving them money because I recognized it was a scam. So what we tell people, like in this example, if you get a call from a utility company and they say, unless you pay us right now, we're going to shut off your utility. So go down to the local convenience store or drugstore and buy some gift cards. Come back, give us the numbers off those gift cards, and we'll accept those for your bill. So first off, no utility company is going to make you go down to a convenience store and purchase gift cards and pay your bill. But second off, if you do fear that your utilities are, you know, going to get shut off, then say, okay, let me hang up the phone with you, check my last bill, and call the number on the bill. Because sometimes these people will give you a number that rings to their call center and making you think it's legitimate, and they'll take your money. So hang up the phone, get out your last utility bill or whatever bill they're trying to make you pay, see the last time you paid it, and call the number on the bill. Call the right utility number and ask them about your account. Is it delinquent? Should somebody be calling and asking me for this? And you can use that logic, you can use that action in any type of scam situation. Take a second in the phone call, look at the last time you paid the bill, get a hold of a friend or family member and run the situation by them, because we've had people do that too. They've called their children or their grandchildren or their spouse or, you know, other relative and say, does this sound right to you? And the person says, no, that's a scam. So call somebody that you can rely on and run the situation by them just to make sure. But it's taking that step back, taking the emotion out of it, using logic, and double-checking what information you're receiving.
I know, as you said earlier, that, you know, the phone is the biggest thing. And I know they'll try to scam. They'll put the scammers on ATM machines mm-hmm. and try to get your information.
Mm-hmm.
But then you may get that, and I get them maybe 3 or 4 times a week. There's been a problem with your Home Depot card. Can you please click on this link mm-hmm. and enter in the last four numbers of your card to verify in your CVV? And what the CVV is, folks, is a 3-digit code on the back of your card. And what people don't understand is, once you get to that site and you load in, you put in your card number and that 3-digit code, at that point in time, they can do whatever they want, just like with the gift cards. They don't physically have to have the cards. Once they get the number and the code on the gift card, they can drain the gift card at that point without even mm-hmm. them having it in their possession.
And it will be done within seconds. Seconds of giving them that gift card number, it will be drained. It is gone.
So why is it that men tend to lose more money when scams, but women are the ones most likely to report a victim of being scammed?
You know, I guess we really don't think about that in our job, but I guess it just kind of depends on the scam. And scammers know that. They're more likely to present a scam to women that they'll be more vulnerable to emotionally. And if they get a hold of a male, they'll present a scam to them. You know, I think each of us all know women's vulnerabilities and men's vulnerabilities and how people can play to those. As far as why women report it, you know, I don't know. Maybe they just think they're doing their due diligence and helping other victims or possible victims by reporting that situation. You know, maybe men are embarrassed of falling for a scam like that. Or they think it'll affect their family and that they're responsible.
I know it's the holiday season. We're online shopping. We're out of stores spending money. We're putting this on our credit card. We're putting that on our credit card. You know, it's Black Friday, Cyber Monday. is this the time of the year when we're more likely to be a victim of fraud, or is it, can fraud happen any time of the year?
Well, I can tell you fraud can happen any time of the year. And scammers, they're smart. They'll follow the seasons. They'll follow what's going on in a particular location sometimes. For example, around tax time, we see an increase of people getting their identity stolen, fraudulent tax returns being filed, or even calls to people saying, hey, this is the IRS, you owe us money. And people, of course, believe it because they're kind of aware of that particular time period when it's tax time. But Christmas, for example, everybody kind of gets in a charitable, good mood when Christmas comes around and the holidays come around. And so maybe scammers are calling and asking for charitable donations, and people are more likely to give at this time of year because they think, it's Christmas, I'm trying to be in the good mood, good spirit, and they're likely to fall for a scam at that time.
I know, you can, even they've went as far as the people that used to ring the bells outside of the stores, the Salvation Army bells,
mm-hmm.
to emulate those people. And it's gotten to a point now where the Salvation Army has set it up now where you can give securely with your smartphone instead of having to, always look at the bucket and make sure you see the Salvation Army sign. You kind of look at the bell ringer. And the thing is, you usually see the same bell ringers at the same stores every year. So, mm-hmm. if you're going into that same store, Lowe's, Home Depot, you're going to see that same bell ringer. So those are things that, while we're out giving and we're trying to give to others, there are people out there trying to give to themselves, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately is right. I don't want to dissuade anybody from giving to charitable organizations by any means. But what we try and tell people is that if you're going to give, make sure you do a little bit of homework before you give to a charitable organization, whether it's in person or it's online. And, I want to bring up the story most recently of online charities. There was the couple with the homeless guy, and they, they raised money for him.
$500,000.
Right, yeah. So that's, I hate to say a good example, but it's kind of an example of when you're giving online, you don't know who you're giving to. And so if you choose to give online, then please do your homework and make sure that it's going to a trusted organization, that it's a secure website. You just don't know sometimes when it's a random cause or a random situation who you're giving to. And unfortunately, those people took a lot of people. They schemed a lot of people in that situation.
And that's why you really have to be careful when you're looking at GoFundMes, because
yes.
The story was, there was a homeless individual, and he gave his last $20 to this lady, and she set up a GoFundMe page. Her and her husband supposedly tracked him down,
mm-hmm.
and over 12,000 people gave almost $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why it fell apart is because he complained, because out of the $500,000, all he got was about $30,000, and they went on trips, they bought expensive cars, bought thousands of dollars worth of bottles of wine and all these different things. But the thing is, they were all in it together. So I was watching Fox 4 this morning, and they have now a vending machine.
I did see that story.
Where you can go to the vending machine, it's done by a church, and you can pick different things to give to, but it's 100% legitimate, and 100% of the profits go back to the organizations that people are trying to help, because the church is taking the share of the cost of the machine. So there are some ways to give, and if you're going to give, definitely look at it and think about it first. Check out the organization. Just make sure that, and another thing people may need to check out is, how much of what the organization receives goes toward those being helped? Because there are some organizations out there that are asking, they're taking 25, 30 cents of every dollar as administrative fee.
Yep.
And you can check that out online,
mm-hmm.
because you may have an organization where only 30% of what you donate goes toward actual helping of people.
Yep, absolutely. Double check that.
So what are some of the top 10 scams that we're seeing or people are trying in our metropolitan Kansas City area?
Well, lately we have, and I say we are, the economic crime section, has received a lot of phone calls in regard to phone scams. I mean, and again, we KCPD's number was used this week to perpetrate some phone scams, but we receive a lot of calls regarding phone scams, whether they're pretending to be the police department, a federal agency, utilities, a charity, a credit card. I mean, I've received numerous phone calls on my phone saying, this is the credit card company, we'd like to lower your rate. Well, if you notice, they didn't say which credit card. And that's the stuff that you have to try and catch. You know, which credit card are you from? And so when they're vague in their phone calls, that's, you know, that's always an indicator that it's probably a scam. But I would say as far as, it's kind of twofold. There's electronically and physically. So we get a lot of phone calls about phone scams. We also get a lot of phone calls about online scams. Whether it's an email or a link like you had brought up with your credit card, you know, let us save you money, and you click on the link and you have to provide the information. Or we get people who click on a link and it freezes up their computer.
Malware.
Yes. Yeah, that's another big one. And then they start demanding money in order to unlock your computer. And I could probably almost bet you that even if you give them money, they're not going to unlock your computer. So those are probably the electronic ways that we're seeing an uptick right now. The second one is physical means. It's a holiday season. Everybody's going to parties. They're going to activities. They're going to shopping malls and districts. And they're leaving things in their cars. And so when you leave your purse or your shopping bag or your wallet or your cell phone or whatever means of identification in your vehicle, people know that, and they're taking those things, and then they're using your credit cards, or they're forging your checks, or they're using your identification to open up credit cards. The second thing we're seeing a lot of is mail theft. People are placing gifts in the mail, or they're receiving gifts in the mail, or on their front porch, whether it's packages or envelopes. And so we just encourage people to make sure that you're checking your mail on a regular basis. And if you're going to mail something to somebody as a gift, make sure you're doing it at the post office as opposed to an unsecured mailbox. That's where we see a lot of problems, is people will put valuable possessions in a mailbox that isn't secured, just like a singular mailbox where you put the flag up. And the next thing you know, their mail is stolen. Somebody's opened up accounts in their name, or they've stolen a check or a gift. So that's kind of the physical things that we're seeing an uptick in right now.
So when people see that Christmas card coming, they know that, you know, in some cases that Christmas card may contain money. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, so maybe it's best to send you don't want to send a gift card because that's even worse. But, if you send a check, then they can get your information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe send in a cashier's check from your bank, which may cost you a little bit, but you know that they can't come back to your bank account, and the bank is not going to get, nobody is going to try, and people may try to do that to a bank, but it's most likely not going to happen. I definitely want you to tell the story before we take a short break. You were saying we were talking before we went on air, and you were saying that you all had, the police department has been targeted multiple times, but you had a caller calling you. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Well, last week, I received a call on our unit phone, to our desk phone, and the guy was trying to scam me out of money, and I couldn't remember exactly what it was because the conversation didn't go that far, but I answered the phone, the police department, and he started to give his spiel, and I said, "Sir, this is a police department phone," and he proceeded to tell me that it wasn't, and that I was lying, and that he needed money, and you know, at that point, you can't really argue with somebody who's not willing to believe that I'm telling him it's a police department phone. And so I hung up. I hung up, which is what we tell people to do. If you feel like something's suspicious, just hang up. And so I hung up on him, and he called back. And he started to berate me because I had hung up on him and that I was lying to him about it being a police department phone. And I hung up on him again, and luckily he didn't call back. But even telling these people that this is a legitimate police department phone. This is the Kansas City Police Department. And he didn't believe me, and he still wanted that money, and he still wanted to, you know, give me his scam. That's how determined some of these people are when they're not willing to believe something like that. So just a heads up.
So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after these short comments. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio Station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson, and our guest today is Detective Lloyd Metters. And we're talking about how to avoid being a victim of scams and scammers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. And you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio Station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our in-studio guest is Detective Lloyd Metters of the Kansas City Police Department Economic Crimes Division. So it's the holiday season. You know, we go from Thanksgiving to Christmas. You know, and we are all have Facebook, social media. Does having social media make you more susceptible to being a victim of crime in multiple different ways?
It can. I don't want to tell people not to have social media. I mean, that's not entirely realistic. But if you're posting pictures on social media or, say, checking into places, that does kind of make you vulnerable. But like you said, it's a holiday season. We go from Thanksgiving to Christmas. We take trips out of town or we go to different events, and people will say, hey, I'm checking into this location and I'm out of town, and they're currently out of town. Well, when somebody sees that, you know, they're going to know that you're not home. And whether it's personal information that somebody can steal when they break into your house or the Christmas gifts that you've purchased and put under your tree, that does make you vulnerable. We've had people post pictures of personal information. You're not really aware of maybe what's in your background, whether it's a credit card or a check or whatever the case may be. They'll post pictures with information that you really, if you walked up to a stranger on the street, you wouldn't give it to them, so don't put it in a picture on social media. So just be aware of what you're posting and what you're saying you're doing and when you're doing it. Posting pictures of a trip, fine. Maybe do it after you get back. That way you're not leaving your home exposed and your personal effects exposed. So just be aware of social media and what you're putting on your photos.
And I know one of those things, and it's not sound like it's a conversation, but it's a conversation I had with my own East Patrol CID officer, community improvement officer, CIO, is that the Ring doorbell does do great during the holiday seasons when you are having items dropped off. You can see a person, you can set up a ring, and when people walk into that ring, then they can kind of, you can kind of see who they are, and you can answer them through that device just like you were at home. So those are things that actually do help secure that, you know, they've got flashlights, floodlights, and right now they're having holiday great deals on one. I know I bought one for about $99, and they are great ways because you get to see and talk with a person that may be coming. You know, if somebody's delivering a gift, can you, put it in the recycling bin that I've got on my porch? Or can you put it underneath the lawn chair? And then they can hear, I'll be out to pick it out in a few, you can tell them I may be out to pick it up in a few minutes and you're not going to be there in a few minutes. So we've got a caller who was a caller who requested this. So just give us a second.
Okay.
Good morning. This is Cowtown Conversations. Good morning, Rich.
Hi, Joseph. Good show. Couple of things. First of all, I've told you my story maybe before, and I won't go through it again, but when they gave me, when I tried to call back the utility company, I couldn't get it on their line. It was busy. So what does the officer tell me to do in that case?
Like you called the number on the bill, and it was busy?
Yeah. they put me in a queue, and it would have been 10, 20 minutes, and I couldn't get through.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. That's probably frustrating. But then again, you know, spending that 10 or 20 minutes trying to get to the utility company to find out if the complaint or the debt collection is legitimate is a lot better than losing several hundred dollars.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying that any route in this instance is easy. It's not going to be. It's just which one you want to deal with. Do you want to lose money or do you just want to spend a few minutes on the phone making sure that your account is up to date or, you know, making sure that they're not going to shut off your utilities?
Okay, now another thing. When you are asked to give money to a charity and they ask you not to send cash but to send a check, will that enable them to withdraw any amount of money they want from your account?
Not necessarily. Well, yes and no. When you send somebody a check, yes, it does expose your checking account number. It does expose your signature. And what one of two things can happen. Somebody can take that legitimate check, and they can do what we call washing it, which is where they place it in a solution, and it removes the ink, and then they're able to alter the amount and who the check is made out to. The other thing we encounter is people will take the numbers off of checks that are stolen or received, and they'll produce multiple checks on your account. And that's, you know, that's considered forgery. So I don't know. I if you're going to give to a charitable organization, just make sure of who you're sending a check to, because you don't know who that check's going to. You don't know who's handling the check. And so maybe find a different way to donate to an organization.
I like to send cash, and I know that's exposing the cash. Somebody can just open the envelope and take the cash.
Sure.
That's generally what I have to do.
Yeah, you know,
cashier's check from your bank would be another alternative that's just as good as cash. Or if you want to use, you know, cashier's check from the bank or a money order or something that you could send that would be only, you know, it'd be more difficult for them to duplicate, and it wouldn't put you at an option where you could be open to loss or theft from theft.
Yeah, there's no way to prevent them from doing this electronification of your check numbers, though. They never used to be able to do that, but now they do that. All the utilities pay your take your check and turn it into an electronic funds transfer.
Yes. I mean, you know, if you're going to send funds through the mail, there's always going to be some vulnerability. If somebody wants to commit a scam, they are always going to find a way. But, you know, at least with a check, you do have that number, and they, you know, do go into a bank, and hopefully that bank has surveillance video, and there is some paper trail in regard to that check that you've written. So it's just, it's which option do you want to take?
Uh-huh. The bank is responsible for any losses if they cash a forged check, aren't they?
It just kind of depends on the bank policy, and that's something that if you are concerned about or wonder about with your particular bank, then you need to contact them. We do have banks that contact us regarding investigations. And, you know, we've heard from citizens before that in some instances their banks didn't refund their money. So I would just make sure with your bank on what their policy is regarding when you have lost to fraud or forgery.
Okay, I appreciate that. Good advice. Joe, great show.
Thank you. So also what people need to understand is that time is of the essence in that situation, and that the quicker that you report your loss to your bank, that they can maybe stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And that in some cases with credit cards, if you report it, I don't know what the time frame is, you need to check with your credit card mm-hmm. company within a certain period that you're only liable for the max up to $50 worth of losses.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's one of those things where the minute you think it's a scam, you report it, and you go down to your bank and fill out that form. But, you know, what we need to understand is that time is on our side, because the longer we wait and delay in doing it, the less apt we are to be a victim of fraud, because they're going to move on to somebody else that they may assume is a easier target to hit.
Or if you don't close your account after you've been the victim of a fraud or close that credit card, then it's just open. It's open. It's exposed.
And you can call the credit card company and tell them that you, I know I've had one lost and one was stolen, and I called them immediately, And they then turned around and he asked me what the last charge was. I told him. He said, that's the last charge we've got on it. And I can't, we think about a lot of online things, but I will say this. Credit Karma is one of the different things that I found online that it's a way for you to take all of your information with you, but you have to have either passwords or biometric to get into it if it's on your phone. But if something happens, you can pull up that app and it'll tell you every credit card you've got. And there's usually something there that says, call this creditor, and you can call them. During that time when your mind is racing, you're trying to remember what your credit card number is, what the phone number off the back of it is, then you can go to that app, open it up, and tell it to call that creditor, and it calls them, and you just explain to them, verify who you are, and say that my card has been lost or stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And even one of the other things I love is Discover, the Discover app, that you can go in and freeze your card. If you can't remember where your card was or what happened, you can freeze your card so nobody can use your card, and then you have the ability to go back and unfreeze it once you find it or something has happened.
Yeah, we typically tell people, I mean, it's really hard to avoid any kind of scam nowadays, or not necessarily a scam, but just being the victim of a financial crime, because everything's electronic now, everything's stored electronically, everybody at some point will be the victim of at least one financial crime, whether it's online or over the phone or whatever means. And so we tell people, if you make sure that you're reviewing your bank account or credit card or financial statements on a regular basis, you're going to catch something that stands out. You know, you're going to catch something unusual. Just like any other crime, it's hard to prevent. But if you're taking a look at your bank accounts and you're proactively keeping track of your finances, you're going to catch something that happened. And then because of that, you're going to be able to report it in a timely manner and take the proper steps, whether it's alerting the credit card companies, closing your bank account, so on and so forth. So that's, you know, that's a big a piece of information we give people to make sure you're doing that.
Detective Meadows, today we have to be on guard from scams at every turn, from the IRS, utility company, credit cards, buying online, malware, which is a type of computer virus, credit card offers, email. You can even be scammed while trying to rent a place to live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What can people do to protect themselves and reduce their chances of being a victim of scammers?
I think in every single one of those situations, if you just take a step back and don't make a quick decision, don't let emotion make your decision, let logic. And I know that's probably easier said than done. But you know, whether you're receiving an offer in the mail or somebody's come to your door or it's online or on the phone or you're renting a place to live and, you know, you think you found the perfect house. In all of those situations, I would be leery of somebody pressuring you to purchase something or make a down payment. If somebody's trying to rush you or they're verbally abusive to you, causing panic and fear, just take a step back. If you're meant to have whatever you want, you will. If you're meant to have that house to rent, it will be there for you. If the purchase online is legitimate, if the purchase over the phone is legitimate, on, you know, in the mail, take a step back, review that decision before you go forward. You know, run it by a friend or a family member. Write down the pros and cons. Yeah, I think that's probably the best piece of advice, because in every single situation that we encounter where somebody's been a victim, they've made a quick decision. They went ahead and just did something because they just wanted it now. And so that's probably the best piece of advice. It's just take a moment. Take a moment, review it. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. No, you can't pay $2,000 to get $20 million from a lottery. You know, that new smartphone, if it's brand new and it's $200 from somebody online, that's probably a scam. You know, like I said, just think about the decision you're making. That's probably the best piece of advice.
As you mentioned, that is something we talked about earlier off air. Phones have gotten to the point where they're out of control. And, you know, when the new iPhone 11 comes out, there are going to be people online advertising for $700-$800. Folks, this is kind of a thing that I follow when I go to buy a used phone from somebody. If you tell me it's from Sprint, we're going to meet you at the Sprint store. If it's from Verizon, we'll meet you at the Verizon store. And I'm going to ask them, one, is this phone, does this phone open, which means does that person owe anything on that phone? Is their balance due? Can I take it to another carrier, or is it locked into this carrier? Because then you may find out that deal is not a deal once you've got it, and you have Sprint, and it's locked into T-Mobile. But also, you know, do they own that phone? Because a lot of people go out, get their brand new phone, make the first month's payment, and then they might even make the first month's payment, and then they turn around and sell it to you for $700-$800, knowing that in 72 hours they're going to cut that phone off. So time is of the essence. It'll be a brand new phone, and you know, at that point in time, usually in that situation, there's the cell phone company is going to say there's nothing they can do for you. So meet them at the store where you of whatever carrier is at. Have them also double check and run a diagnostic on the phone, because it may be a brand new phone on the outside, and it may be set up just to work a couple of different times. So ask them to run a diagnostic on it. It will be free. It won't cost you anything. And you can save yourself from losing $700-$800. It works on new phones as well as used phones. They can run a diagnostic on it, and it can tell you if there's any problems with the phone. It may have something intermittent that you may not notice until 4 or 5 days later, but if they run a diagnostic on it, they're at the store, they run it through its paces. So those definite things in which you have to look out for. When I was in the Citizens Police Academy, and the individual that works with KCPD came to talk about scams, they're saying that people now are looking at dating scams. Can you talk briefly about what dating scams are and what people need to be on the lookout for?
Dating scams, again, scams are like spider webs. They can go in very many different directions. A situation comes to mind. I did unfortunately have a victim who met a gentleman online, and so many of these times these people have never met in person. The gentleman said, "Hey, I'm taking a job on an oil rig in kind of an Arctic location. I need some money for the time being till I can get by and pay you back." And $65,000 later, she realized that she wasn't getting her money back. And some of the signs, again, you know, when she kind of took a step back and she looked at what had occurred over time, is that she was thinking with emotion. And, you know, she never met him in person. And she showed me some of the pictures that he had sent to her. And in some of these pictures, he looked a bit different in every single picture. Sometimes there were pictures with kids, but he didn't mention having kids. There's going to be little discrepancies here and there with somebody's story. They're not going to be able to provide details, or they're not going to be able to back up what they're claiming, or maybe a picture is not going to match the information. So that's kind of the dating scams that we've encountered. Basically, somebody claiming that they have to go out of town for a job and they need money to get by, and so they'll ask you to send them several $1,000s and they promise to pay you back. So if you're going on a dating website, just again, double check your information. Just double check your information and make sure that you're making good decisions. And if somebody's asking you for money and they've never met you in person, that might be a pretty suspicious indication right there, that they're trying just to get money out of you. So
two things that seem to be a common denominator when it comes to being a victim or a scam or greed and need. Those are looking to get rich quick, and those who are offering need, trying to, i.e., pay their utilities before they're being shut off, save their home, or help save a loved one. Why should we only work with verified companies or organizations during these times? As you said, take that minute, get out that last bill, and call the company. Or all of us have smartphones. If you've got KCPNL, Google KCPNL, and the number will come up. Don't respond to the number that they give you to respond to, because, as you said, in many cases, they're having you call back to their boilerplate warehouse where people are looking to tell you this is KCPNL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'll just kind of use a few examples with the utility companies. Everybody, like you said, has a smartphone nowadays, or pretty much does, or they have their physical bill. Call the number on the bill. Google the company. Google the utility company. And call the number associated with that utility company. It's a federal agency, IRS. Somebody's calling and claiming that you haven't paid your taxes and that you owe money, and they're going to come arrest you immediately if you don't pay your taxes right now. Well, the IRS doesn't do that. The IRS communicates via U.S. mail. They will not call you, and they will not request money from you. And I'm sure that if we took that step back, we would remember when we filed our tax return. And if we did owe that money, we would have been notified at that time if we owed that money. And or if you're getting notification that you do owe money, then that's going to be via the U.S. mail. It's going to be in paper from the IRS. Charitable organizations. If you're receiving phone calls from charitable organizations asking for money, because there are legitimate organizations that do that, just say, okay, well, I'll take down the information and Google the organization and call them and say, should this person be calling and asking for money? So again, same common theme, take a step back and verify what somebody's given you and get your own information instead of using the phone number that they've given you.
If you've been a victim of one of these white-collar crimes, what should you do? Should you call the police department immediately? Do you call the economic crime section? What should you do at that point in time?
The first thing I would do is shut off your credit card, contact your bank, and freeze your account just to make sure that no more financial transactions come through. Because once that person gets a hold of your credit card or your bank card or your checking account, they're not going to run just that one transaction. They're going to run a transaction until they empty your bank account. So cut off the fence, essentially, is close the bank account, shut off the credit card. The next step that we encourage people to do, if you'd like to file a police report, then visit one of our division stations and file the report there. And, of course, you can call the Economic Crime Section for any advice in regard to filing that report. So, and document. That's the third thing. You know, when we file a case, that's what our cases are built off of. They're built off documents. And so if you've been the victim of a financial crime, print off everything that you've done or write down everything that you've done, the date and time you called the bank, who you spoke with, keep your credit card statement with that fraudulent charge, your bank account with that fraudulent charge. If you do a credit freeze or an alert, keep that documentation. And just hold on to those documents indefinitely.
We've got a caller online, too. Dennis, can you state your question or comment for Detective Metters?
Yeah, you bet. On your experience, Detective, would you say that the primary motivation is economic for these scams?
Sure.
I know there are people that are con artists whose father or mother were con artists, and they have it in their blood, kind of, so they're doing it probably for psychological reasons, too, but primarily people do this for profit.
Sure, yeah, right? They do it for money. They do
yeah.
it for money, and how they spend that money is there's a multitude of reasons, but they do it for money, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you see any connection with the wider economy?
See any connection with what? I'm sorry.
The wider economy? Isn't that why what capitalism is? Profit maximization driven, correct?
Yeah, well, there's a difference between gaining profit legitimately and then scamming people out of money and not giving them what they're promised.
Don't tell me. I'm a Calvinist. I don't think most work forms of work are even worth doing.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I drank, but, I couldn't work as a bartender.
Well, thank you so much, Dennis, for your comment and question. We're just about out of time here, so we never end without our community minute. The next City of Kansas City, Missouri housing meeting will be Saturday, December 1st at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Brush Creek Boulevard from 10 to 1130. Your feedback is needed to help shape the housing plan for the next 5 years in Kansas City. And also, Central Patrol Division will host a crime prevention for the holidays December 4th at Central Patrol Station, 1200 Linwood Boulevard from 6 to 7:30 p.m. For more information, contact Officer Holly Strickner at 816-234-5510. I would like to thank Detective Meadows for being our guest today on Cowtown Conversations. You know, stay tuned. Coming up is My Place with Larry J. So for Cowtown Conversations, this is being your host, Joseph Jackson. Stay warm and have a great day.
To 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.